Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Thanks for joining us today. This Saturday night, in only 2 days, AEW will broadcast the third edition of the Full Gear pay-per-view from the Target Center in Minneapolis. As you may recall, Full Gear a year ago was held in front of a limited, socially distanced crowd at Daly's Place in Jacksonville, and it rocked nonetheless. So this Saturday, now in front of a full house at the Target Center, you can expect more of the same. In fact, Full Gear will mark one of the biggest shows of 2021 with three AEW championship belts on the line. Darby Allin also takes on MJF, CM Punk versus Eddie Kingston, Bryan Danielson versus Miro, a Minneapolis street fight, and other can't-miss matches. So with that, it is now my honor to introduce AEW CEO, GM, and head of creative, Tony Khan, who is here for the next 45 minutes or so to answer your questions. I'll turn it over to Tony now for some opening thoughts, and then we'll open the lines for your questions. Tony?
Hey, everyone. I really look forward to your questions, and I don't want to take up too much of the time so everyone can get them in. I'm very much looking forward to the pay-per-view this weekend, and thank you all for participating in this call and helping us spread the word about AEW and Full Gear.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Tony. So here we go. We're going to start with Chris Mueller from Bleacher Report. And then after Chris, on the on-deck circle, will be John Alba from Ad Free Shows. So, Chris, the floor is yours.
Thanks. Hey, Tony. So with Full Gear coming up, we've got a big card here with 10 matches. And previous pay-per-views have been similar length. I was just wondering if that is sort of like the ideal length that you've kind of picked for AEW pay-per-views, or do you ever see that being shortened or expanded for different events in the future?
Well, it's a great question, Chris. For the big four AEW pay-per-views, I think we found a great length that works very well for us. We've had really, really great reviews for the pay-per-views we've done, and particularly the All Out pay-per-view, our most recent show, is the best feedback we've ever had on anything we've ever done, any show. And it's the most revenue we've ever brought in from a pay-per-view. And I think it was also the best the fans or the critics have ever received any of the shows. So I really like the format and length of the shows, the 4 hour main card plus the buy-in with a pre-show match or two. So yeah, I think it's a good length of card, and we really found something that works for us very well.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Chris. Okay, as promised, John Alba from Ad Free Sports is next. And after that, I'm going to read a write-in question from Jonathan Hood of ESPN Chicago. So, John?
Jim, thank you. And Tony, thank you for your time, as always. I'd like to ask about Hangman Page, someone who we saw at the introductory press conference for AEW back in the beginning of 2019. He was positioned to be a big star out of that gate, and yet here we are now, more than 2 years later, seemingly ready for what could be a crowning moment. What would you like to say about his journey over the course of that time and how he's grown as a performer? And why is now the right time for him to face Kenny Omega on this stage?
Well, it's a great question, John. We've talked about homemade stars before in AEW, and this is the epitome of the homemade star. Hangman Page was a young wrestler when he joined AEW, who a lot of the hardcore wrestling fans knew, but he hadn't had a lot of experience wrestling on national television. And he's really blossomed under the eyes of the fans and the people who've been watching AEW from the beginning. And we've been really blessed to have a great audience that stuck with us from when we first launched Dynamite in 2019. And there's all these fans that have seen Hangman grow. He actually got the very first shot at the AEW title. He and Chris Jericho, Hangman and Chris Jericho, wrestled in the first ever All Out main event. They had a great match. And then we've seen Hangman grow so much as a wrestler from when he debuted. Obviously, we, you know, had big plans for him. I thought really highly of him since he first came in and have always believed he's a top wrestler. Now here he is again, getting another opportunity at the championship, and it's a very different company and it's a very different situation. There's so much history between Kenny and Hangman. They had a great partnership. It was something I felt really strongly about from the beginning of AEW, that I really believed in Kenny and Hangman together as a team and what we could build from it. And here we are, and we, you know, we're still, it's still, you know, bearing the fruits of our labor. So I really have always believed in Hangman Page, and I've also really believed in Kenny Omega, and that there's something special between the two of them at first as a tag team on our third ever Dynamite in Philadelphia. We did a match. It was Kenny Omega and Hangman Page versus John Moxley and Pac. And that was the first time Kenny Omega and Hangman Page had ever teamed. And I liked it a lot. The match did a really good number and they kept teaming. And there was so much story. I mean, they had so much chemistry, and then they had this amazing match against the Young Bucks at Revolution. And we just saw they had an amazing chemistry as a tag team, yet there was something between them where you could immediately tell that someday it was going to be an amazing rivalry between Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. And then they had an amazing match at Full Gear last year. And as Jim said in the introduction to the call, Full Gear last year was held at Daly's Place in front of a physically distanced, limited crowd. But at the time, there was nothing like it in North American pro wrestling. There were about 1,300 fans at Daly's Place at about 25% capacity, outdoors, socially distanced. So we did those shows, as you've all heard me say many times, it was like a drive-in movie where each group of fans had their own pod and they had their own seating section outdoors. And we found a way to bring outdoor wrestling and live wrestling back. And it was the only place on TV worldwide, really, where the fans could see that kind of wrestling with the fans cheering and going crazy. And, what a match it was at Full Gear, Kenny Omega and Hangman Page last year in the finals of the Eliminator Tournament to get a shot at the world title. And then from there, Kenny Omega won the world title, and he's closing in on 1 year as the world champion. He is our longest reigning champion, and the company has grown and evolved so much with Kenny as the champion, and he's had so many classic matches already in this run, and I'm very excited for their match. And I think for Hangman Page, it's hard to talk about the story of Hangman Page in AEW without talking about also the story of Kenny Omega. And that's one of the reasons why this Kenny Omega versus Hangman Page match is one of the most anticipated matches, I think, ever in AEW. The character of Hangman Page, I think the fans have grown to love him more. On January 1st, 2020, we saw kind of a more vulnerable side of the Hangman character for the first time. To be honest, on BTE, I watch the BTE show and the guys do great work on it and they come up with really funny stuff. And a lot of times if I see something on BTE that I really like, I'll say, I want to use it on Dynamite. And, you know, a great example more recently of that is John Silver, the John Silver, Adam Cole stuff. I saw that on BTE. I thought it was great. And I was getting over it. I wanted to use it. And really John Silver himself, a year ago, I saw John Silver doing all this stuff on BTE and it was like, hey, like, you're doing all this amazing stuff on BTE. I think, you know, I think you should be doing this on Dynamite. I'm very impressed. And, you know, really cut back to 2019, a year earlier, I had seen Hangman Page drinking on BTE and doing a character. And I thought his acting was great. And I thought the character was great. And it showed a more vulnerable side of the Hangman and made him, I thought, really a flawed hero in many ways, and I think it has made him connect more with the audience. I think it's worked really well, and it was a big part of the story. And then people were, you know, ready to see him come back from the lowest lows and get some redemption. But it's a great story because there's something in front of him, an obstacle that certainly he's never conquered and nobody's been able to conquer. So I think everybody's really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen at the pay-per-view between Kenny and Hangman.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, John. I'm going to read a question here from Jonathan Hood from ESPN Chicago. Tony, Jonathan would like to know, how likely is it for you to have pay-per-view events in California or other Pacific / Mountain Time Zone cities in the future? After Tony answers that, we'll be calling on Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful. Tony?
So, thanks, Jim. It's a great question, Jonathan. And we are coming out to the West Coast next year and Double or Nothing. I feel pretty safe about saying it now. I think it's been, you know, it's been difficult not being able to travel as much as we would have liked. And right now in 2021, we're making up a lot of dates that were shows we had scheduled in 2020 and had never done. Like in April 2020, our whole slate got canceled at the beginning of the pandemic outbreak. And it was a run of shows we had of Milwaukee, St. Louis, Boston, Philadelphia, and Houston. And all five of those shows we just did very recently here in the past couple months. So we are now just getting kind of caught up on pre-scheduled dates. We are going to service our great fans on the West Coast in 2022. And I am planning for Double or Nothing to return to Las Vegas in 2022. And we'll also, I think, do Dynamite and Rampage while we're on the West Coast. And I really look forward to that and bringing Double or Nothing back to Vegas, although it was also great having Double or Nothing in Daly's Place this past year and all the events in Daly's Place. They were such a great home for us, but I'm very excited to go back to Vegas also.
Thank you, Jonathan. So next up will be Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful, and following Sean will be Ella J from SE Scoops.
Unmuted.
Hey, Tony, there have been a lot of questions regarding Ring of Honor due to some unfortunate news we heard about them taking some time off and maybe the company looking completely different. They've released, or everybody will be released from their contract soon. There's also obviously a very vast video library there, which includes All In, which was kind of a precursor to AEW. Who knows if that's even for sale right now, but is there any interest on your part in pursuing that or any of the talent that is going to be available there? Because there's quite a bit of it.
Well, there's a lot of great stuff there. They've had a lot of great shows in the library, and they have some very good talent. So I can't say with any certainty, but we'll see what happens on the business side. And as far as the talent goes, I would say stay tuned to AEW. You know, there's Dynamite every Wednesday. There's Rampage this tomorrow, and the Full Gear pay-per-view on Saturday. So you never know who's going to show up in AEW. And as for the business side of it, I'm good friends with a lot of people in the company of Ring of Honor, and actually the agent that represents them is my neighbor in LA. He lives like down the block. So and he's a friend of mine. So I am very familiar with what's going on there, but I can't say with any degree of certainty what'll happen on the business side.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Sean. Ella J from SE Scoops is next, and following Ella will be Nick Hausman from Wrestling Inc. Ella?
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. So I had a women's wrestling question for you.
Great.
So obviously the bar, I think, has been really raised this year with a lot of all-women shows and main events taking place. But does AEW have any plans or hopes to contribute maybe an all-women's event of their own sometime?
So I'm going to cut off your question right there, because I don't think I get enough credit for what I did for the NWA show, because a good number of the people who wrestled on the NWA show were wrestlers I sent and paid. And so I do think I contributed, because the highest paid wrestlers on that show were actually the people I paid separately from what they already make in AEW to go wrestle on that show. And I don't think they did a very good job of telling people that, honestly. Even though it wasn't like the deal we did, I wish they'd told more people that, because that was one of the points I made when we closed it. Was I think it would be nice if you told people that I'm paying the wrestlers coming, because it is a big contribution for me. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So I did pay the wrestlers for that show. So I was like, it's like kind of like when you pay for a dinner and nobody thanks you. So like, That was one thing. So I have really been making a big effort this year to grow and improve our women's division, and I think have made I think a lot of strides with our women's division this year as a company. We've added big free agents, and I'm really excited about what's happening with the TBS tournament right now. Among the big free agents we've added are Thunder Rosa, who came over from the NWA, of course, and, you know, Ruby Soho. And Ruby Soho coming over, it's interesting because I had a great conversation with her a couple days ago. She's in the TBS Championship Tournament, and she's been in a lot of tournaments, and she's wrestled all over, as you know. And I, so, you know, I was talking to her about the tournament, and she's not a BS person. Like, Dory, Ruby Soho, is the ultimate straight shooter, and she loves this tournament. She was saying she's never been in a tournament like this. She loves all the story in it, because if you look, like, there's story building with her and Chris Statlander, and they didn't really have a rivalry, but there's, you know, they've been doing the promos on TV, and we've seen that there's been a couple of situations where they've helped each other out. You know, Chris had Ruby's back, and then now they're even, and Ruby doesn't owe her anything anymore. And really, I'm excited very much for Jade versus Red Velvet. I'm very excited for Sheeta versus Nyla Rose. And of course, we've seen a lot of great build, including last night's Dynamite towards Thunder Rosa versus Jamie Hayter. So I have been and am trying to actively make big strides in women's wrestling. And as far as a lot of the stuff that has been happening in the all-women shows that have happening other places, I actually have made great contributions, including financial contributions, which I think they could have done a better job of telling people about, honestly, if that makes sense.
Thanks, Tony.
Yes,
thanks.
Makes sense.
Thank you.
So next up is Nick Hausman from Wrestling Inc. And thereafter, I will have a write-in question from Sebastian Diaz from Over the Top Rope Wrestling in Chile. So, Nick, you're up.
Tony, can you hear me?
Hey. Tony?
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you great.
Sorry. I had myself
doubled. No, you're good, Nick.
Okay, wonderful. Hi, Tony. Thank you very much for the time. I kind of want to follow up on something I'm sure you get a lot of questions about. But, you know, earlier when you were asked about Bray Wyatt, he was still under 90-day non-compete. Obviously, that expired like a week and a half ago. I guess on behalf of a lot of fans, I know he's interested in the movie business right now. But have you had any contact, or has your interest level changed in bringing Bray Wyatt, you know, into AEW?
No, I like Wyndham a lot. You know, we'll see what happens. I haven't talked to him about it ever, about him coming to AEW. The last time I saw Wyndham was at Chris Jericho's birthday party. And I think, you know, it was a pretty late night, and it was last year. So it's a very different world. And I only saw him in passing very briefly. I was heading out as he was heading in. But it was pretty late at night. I think he's a wonderful person and a great talent.
Thank you, Nick. Okay, I've got a question here from Sebastian Diaz, who's writing in from Chile. Hi, Tony. We're entering the last weeks of Dynamite on TNT as a weekly show before we jump to TBS. So that's a new start. Will there be a refresh of the brand, maybe new music, new logo, stages, or will it be the same? Greetings from Santiago, Chile. Tony?
Hey. Okay, so basically, Jim, the question about Dynamite, just to make sure I got the question, it's asking if the format will be the same when we move to TBS.
Yeah, format, look, you know, staging, the lighting, the music, you know, will it be a different look on TBS, or are we going to pretty much go from the TNT look into TBS?
Well, it's a great question. Okay, so now I understand. That is a great question, and it's a few questions in one. The great wrestling and the great wrestlers and what people love about Dynamite, for the most part, I think that's all going to be the same. But the look of the show, you know, we may do some tweaks and presentation, and it'll be fun, and we'll do our best. And if you don't like it, then we'll go back to what we had. But I think we're going to look at the presentation of the show going into TBS, but the wrestling, the wrestlers, all the stuff you love about the show, for the most part, I think will be the same. And hey, if I mess with the look of the show and you don't like it, I can always go back. So I think that's a great question, but I'm also very excited about the move to TBS and all the great things that will happen with that, which will be great for us. It's great to be back on Wednesday night now, We were on this amazing run on Wednesday nights, and really, it's our home. And there have been a couple times where we've had to shift to, you know, Saturdays here and there, and it's always, you know, uphill to get your momentum back when you do. So I think, I understand, there'll be a bit less time shifting when we do move to TBS. There are still sports on TBS where there are conflicts and stuff, but I think it'll be great for the fans, and very excited. Also, Rampage will be staying on TNT. And of course, that same week in January, when we launch Dynamite on TBS, we'll of course have Rampage again on TNT, and then we'll have the first ever Battle of the Belts in AEW. So stay tuned for more info on that. And 2022, we're going to start it in a very big way.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, Sebastian, for joining us from South America. So I'm going to come up with two names here. Steven Spice from Steven's Wrestling Journey will be next, and he will be followed by Niger Chambers from Big Gold Belt Media. Steven, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All yours.
Hi, Tony. Thank you so much for bringing me on. This means so much to me.
Hey, how are you?
I love AEW.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear it.
And so my question is, how do you and your crew develop the ideas of the matches that go on these pay-per-views and every Thursday night?
And well, I work really hard, and I work with a lot of different people. And so I stay up really late on Tuesday nights and Thursday nights a lot. And that helps come up with ideas. And a lot of times you're thinking about it all night and or all day, and you never know when the good ideas come to you. And then a lot of other people have really good ideas too. So I talk to lots of different people, and lots of different people have really good ideas. And I have to take all the ideas and figure out which ones are the good ones and which ones are the bad ones. And I try to mostly pick the good ones. And I have a lot of ideas on matches, and I try to organize the show every week based on what would make sense for the fans and what would make sense for the flow of the show. And, you know, I have to fit the commercial breaks in. And it's a very different job formatting Dynamite versus formatting Rampage. You know, a lot more goes in some ways to doing Dynamite, where you have all these segments and there's so many people in a Dynamite and there's so much stuff that happens in a 2-hour show. In Rampage, it's more succinct because I like to get a lot of good wrestling in a 1-hour show, which is a challenge, but it's also a really fun challenge. So it's difficult in a totally different way. And then the pay-per-views, which you also asked about. Famously, I guess people know, I doodle around a lot and sketch out ideas and kick around ideas, but I also change them. And I told people when somebody photographed me on the sidelines of a Jaguars game, and I wasn't even doodling in that moment. I was actually writing on the other side of the page about football, but I flipped the page over and then somebody took a picture of me on the sideline. And, but as you can see, what I was doodling, I had a lot of, you know, second thoughts. I changed a lot of stuff, a lot of new ideas that made sense, came into fruition. And frankly, a lot of circumstances changed. So, that's how it is. And it's a great question. And sometimes you have all week to think about it. And there's other times, like in the pandemic, where somebody you know, isn't able to come to work, or, you know, they have symptoms, or you're waiting for them to get a test back, or, you know, you don't want to take a chance, or there's travel. There were a ton of travel issues. And at the beginning of the pandemic, the bigger issue was, a lot of people weren't really comfortable traveling, which I totally understood. And it told everybody, I think, as Tony Schiavone reiterated this week, told everybody at the beginning of the pandemic, everybody can stay home if they want. We're just going to run with volunteers to keep the show going, because the show is what the money I bring in, which I use to pay everybody. And so with the volunteer crew, that was like, you know, about 29% of the people, I booked the shows very quickly to make sure we had great shows to keep the show on the air. But there were also a lot of really great matches in that time, and memorable moments, like when Sheeta versus Britt, that great match they had where Britt got her nose broken, or so many great matches in the inaugural TNT title tournament, and that's where we held that. And even Orange Cassidy made his TV wrestling debut in that moment. I didn't have a lot of choices. I mean, and for all things considered, at that point, I did a good number. So I really am very fortunate to have a lot of really smart people who come up with great ideas that I work with, and it's a fun job being able to come up with my own ideas and then sort through the ideas of a lot of really smart people and try to put together a wrestling show that's like about as fun a job as there is.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Stephen. Next is Niger Chambers from Big Gold Belt Media. Following Niger will be Russ Weakland from Hollywood Life. Niger, you're up.
Hey, how's it going, Tony?
Very well. Thanks, man.
Good, good. Last night, of video kind of went viral on social media after the conclusion of Dynamite, where we see you, Ruby Soho, CM Punk, and Cody Rhodes invite a fan into the ring as he celebrates being cancer free, which is a very special moment. Really touched me. I thought it was one of the best things I've seen on social media in a while. Could you talk a little bit about how does moments like that happen? How do you connect with the fans and be able to have that type of connection and outreach in such a quick moment to make these moments happen?
Well, I love booking when it's fun stuff like that and you're not worrying about booking for ratings. So that's like the fun side of booking. So I was in Gorilla and during a commercial break, we were doing the thing where it was Pac versus Dax, and we were in commercial before the main event match, and then we had the contract signing for Kenny versus Hangman after that. And I was by Cody, and I had planned for Punk to go out because the crowd hadn't gotten to see Punk yet, and I wanted to make sure he interacted with the crowd because he was on the show fighting backstage with Eddie, but the crowd hadn't heard from him and seen him, and I know it would mean a lot to a lot of the people for him to come out and be there. So I had mentioned to Cody I was going to go out with Punk, and Cody and had said that, you know, he'd heard, and Cody does such a great job of community outreach, he works with a bunch of great people, including the Captain Sean Dean and Thunder Rosa and other people in AEW, including Amanda Huber, and they found a fan who they said was cancer free, and that was really cool. And so I said, all right, well, that's what I'll do is I'll bring out Cody, then I'll bring out CM Punk. And then Punk told me, reminded me really, that this is Ruby's hometown. And he said, you know, why don't I bring out Ruby then too? And that's another pop, and that'll be great. And I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. We'll definitely do that. And so that's what we'll do. And that's what we did. So that is, like I said, when you're not booking for rating and it's easy stuff like that, that was just a fun thing. So that's literally how it all came together. And it was really nice to meet Joe. And I think hopefully it was a good moment for Joe, and also just try to make it a nice moment for the fans in Indianapolis, and also for Ruby, because it's her hometown. And, you know, she's a big star, and we want to treat her like a big star. And it was cool for her to have that moment.
Thank you, Niger, and thank you, Tony. Okay, next is Russ Weakland from Hollywood Life, and then I will follow that with a write-in from Mark Madison from Pro Wrestling Post. Russ?
Yeah, hi. I was And any date on the Owen Hart Memorial Tournament?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked. There will be updates on the Owen Hart Memorial Tournament after Full Gear. There's so much on the card, right? And there's so many stories, and the show is so jam-packed. And I didn't want the Owen Hart Cup to lose the focus when I start talking about it. But the Owen is going to be a big prize in AEW, and I'll have some interesting announcements about it. One thing I will say right now I'm going to save it. I'll save it till after Full Gear. You guys will get more announcements on the Owen Hart Cup. I think I'll save it for Dynamite or Rampage after the pay-per-view. But stay tuned on that one. I will give more updates on the Owen Hart, and I have something fun I think everyone will really enjoy.
Thank you, Tony. Stay tuned, Russ. So next, I'm going to read you a question, Tony, from Mark Madison of Pro Wrestling Post. And then after Tony answers that, next up will be Stephanie Chase from Digital Spy. Here's the question from Mark, Tony. With Eddie Kingston's recent Players Tribune article in which he poured his heart out, could you see back when he initially joined AEW what his contribution to AEW and to the locker room would be eventually a year from now, you know, and you know, did you foresee the kind of person that you would have, you know, in Eddie Kingston at AEW?
Yes, pretty quickly. I connected with Eddie Kingston immediately. I'm a very, very close friend of mine, and I didn't know him until he came in. But I connected with him very quickly and tried to find a spot for him right away too. If you remember, he debuted against Cody, and it was a great match. And it was when Cody was the TNT champion and we did the open challenge, and Cody came to me with a list of people when he wanted to do the open challenge. And there were a bunch of really good names on it. And the names I think a lot of the people on the list I did end up wanting to use. And then I had some names of my own, but two names he had that he really wanted to work with that have been great were Ricky Starks and Eddie Kingston. And I felt really strongly about them both after they had the match with him too. And he did a great job in the matches with them, and they both did a great job in the matches with him. And in both cases, I had something for them. Now in Ricky's case, it was right when he was in the ring. I knew I wanted to use both of these guys on Dynamite. And in the pandemic era, when stars like this came across your desk, you really wanted to hold on to them. So Ricky, I immediately knew I was going to do the Team Taz thing with. And I actually called Mox at his house and told him I had found a guy that for us to do this with. And he hadn't really seen Rico, and I told him to trust me. And he did. And then he came over, brought Rico over, and he was like, "You were totally right." Now let me go back to Eddie, and I'll talk about Eddie for a really long time. So Eddie, I didn't have that for. I knew I had to do something with this guy. What a massive talent. And Cody and Eddie had such a great match. And I found a unique opportunity because at Fyter Fest last year, Young Bucks and FTR were teaming. And it was an unlikely partnership, and they teamed against the Lucha Brothers and the Butcher and the Blade, which was also kind of a unique team, in an 8-man tag match at Fyter Fest 2020. And the Butcher and the Blade and the Lucha Brothers won. And I felt like I had to do something with that, because I was like, they beat the Young Bucks and FTR. That's a huge win. And I really want to follow up on it. And I also really want to use these guys. And I'll be honest now, because it was a year and a half ago and it's in the past, like I was, not as deep on the heel side then. And I really wanted to make a go with these guys. And I decided to bring Eddie back as their wrestler and as a manager. And Eddie's a huge fan of Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. And I'm a huge fan of Gilbert, a huge fan. And he's an inspiration to Eddie. And I told Eddie, this is your chance to kind of be the Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert of this stable. You're a wrestler and you're a manager. And you'll be the manager for these guys. You do a lot of the talking. And that's where the connection with Eddie and, of course, the Lucha Brothers and the Butcher and the Blade began. And then going into All Out 2020, the build, if you remember, was kind of a unique heel build. And some people say heel doesn't always work. I think one of the best examples when I was a kid would be the Horsemen versus the Midnight Express, Arn and Tully versus the Midnight Express, which was a program that had never really got going as much as it could have. It was really drawing money, and then all of a sudden Arn and Tully were gone and became the Brainbusters. That was a great program, and I always thought there was something to it. So we did this where I had a heel situation, basically, where it was Jake the Snake and Lance Archer. It was Team Taz, the aforementioned Starks and Brian Cage and with Taz, and then this Eddie Kingston group. And then it would always look like it was about to tee off between the three sides of heels. And then Darby would show up, and Darby had this beef with Team Taz, and he would go crazy, and it would all set off, and it was leading to the Casino Battle Royale. Well, I felt really strong, and Eddie had just gotten to the company, and I had the last two guys out there be Lance Archer and Eddie Kingston, and it was this disputed finish in the end, which wasn't even exactly the way Eddie went through the ropes, wasn't even exactly how we originally laid it out, but it actually worked out even better. And I had earmarked Eddie to wrestle John Moxley, and that's why I wanted him to be out there and be him and Lance to be the last two guys, because they were the two guys I saw as great opponents for John. And then Lance, of course, as he said, you know, he was like, you never expected anything to happen. We were all being very careful in a bubble, and then he went to the veterinarian, and next thing you knew, he had COVID. And you know, it worked out well because Lance and John Moxley eventually got to do their matches and built a great rivalry, including the Texas Death Match. But in the moment, it was Eddie's time, and Eddie had this great match with John Moxley, and it really built something great. And then they had a real rivalry, and we were able to do, a pay-per-view story building to Full Gear last year. And John Moxley versus Eddie Kingston was main event of Full Gear last year for the world title. And Eddie Kingston's been a huge part of the company. Now, so that's the yes to your question. And now to the no. I mean, Eddie's, I knew the hardcore fans loved Eddie, and I also had seen that he'd crossed over to a mainstream audience, and this was a person you could push on national television as a main event wrestler. But I don't want to undersell how far he's come in the past year or two, and also how far he's come outside of the ring, because I knew Eddie had had some struggles, but getting to know him more in the past year, I've learned more and more about it and how far he's come. And the people who knew him before I did tell me, like, you wouldn't believe how far Eddie's come, like, if you knew him back then. So yes and no, but as a wrestler, really, since he got here, I've always believed in him, and I'm not surprised at all how well he's done. And I absolutely believed in him to put him in, you know, on a pay-per-view in such a critical position in one of the biggest matches of the year, Eddie Kingston versus CM Punk.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for the write-in question there, Mark. Stephanie Chase from Digital Spy is next, and Stephanie will be followed by Jim Barcelone from the Miami Herald. Steph?
Hi, Tony. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I wanted to ask you about the Inner Circle versus American Top Team feud and Full Gear match. What made you choose the Inner Circle for this position to go against American Top Team? And laying out the feud and the matches we've seen so far, how have you found balancing the idea of protecting the AW guys versus outsiders when, in this case, the outsiders are legit MMA fighters? And if I can sneak in another one, Paige VanZant has been so great. Have you spoken to her at all about eventually wrestling?
That's a few great questions. And the way I came up with it was being good friends with Dan Lambert again through the pandemic. Dan came and visited and was at the shows and is a big wrestling fan. He's a big fan of old school wrestling, as he's made very clear. And he's also a big fan of modern wrestling, and he's a really intelligent person. And he had in his stable an American Top Team in his camp. He's got some of the best fighters in the world. And the idea for Inner Circle to be their opponents, I had gone to Chris and I told him, I think there's something really here, and maybe I'm crazy, but Chris totally agreed. And it's funny because I've seen all these arenas with all this heat, and now looking back on it, it's amazing how far it's come. And you know, we've been at Arthur Ashe Stadium and big arenas across the country, and wherever we go, Dan gets insane heat, and the American Top Team get booed, and people love Chris Jericho in the Inner Circle. So it's I think it's a great pairing, and it's produced some of the loudest reactions from the fans we've heard in a long time. And I think people are having a lot of fun with it. It's a cool rivalry. It's gotten us a lot of mainstream buzz, which I also expected going into it, because when you have things like Jorge Masvidal throwing the flying knee at Chris Jericho, that is going to get picked up. And in that case, it got picked up almost every outlet. So it was some of the biggest mainstream coverage we've ever had, along with, you know, other huge stars we've had in AEW like Shaq and Mike Tyson. And this got picked up on that level, you know, along the lines of Shaq, Mike Tyson, Snoop Dogg, and other great celebrities who come into AEW. So the American Top Team have, I think, been great for us and will be great for us. And the Inner Circle also are, you know, since the beginning of AEW, steadfast parts of the show. And really very excited for the Minnesota Street Fight. And Paige VanZant, what a great talent. I'm a huge fan, and I really like Paige. Paige and Austin, and, you know, have been here a lot, and I would love for them to keep coming and for Paige to do more. Absolutely. I think she's tremendous.
Thank you, Stephanie. next up will be Jim Varsalone from the Miami Herald. And Jim will be followed by Bill Pritchard from WrestleZone. Jim, you're up.
Unmuted.
Oh, thank you so much. Wanted to address the dark tapings at Universal Studios and your thoughts of how things have been going there with that, the crowds, just the whole setup there. And is the plan moving forward to just continue doing it from Universal when you can, going into the next year?
Yes, to be a total straight shooter, yes, I'm going to keep doing that dark tapings or when we can, when it makes sense. When we've done live rampages, as many of you know, in the wrestling media, we've also taped dark there and done Elevation at Dynamite, which is what we did this week. So we will again tape dark tomorrow before Rampage. So I am expecting that to continue to kind of be the cadence, and we can look forward to more dark tapings at Universal. The fans have really enjoyed them, and I've had a lot of fun at them too. If, you know, any of you who've been at them, I think they've been really fun shows, and a lot of the big stars have been very generous with their time too. So it's a fun thing we've been doing.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Jim. Bill Pritchard from WrestleZone is next, and Bill will be followed by Samantha Shipman from Daily DDT. Bill?
Hey, Tony. How are you?
Hey, Bill. Great. How's it going, man?
Not too bad. Thanks for taking the time for this. I actually wanted to ask about Lio Rush. He made his in-ring return this week, and just wanted to get your thoughts on... Oh, happy birthday. Just wanted to get your thoughts on how that's going, if there's any plans to, you know, keep them as a dedicated tag team, or if it's really just feeling things out right now and use them as best as
you want to. I think it's a story that is developing between Lio and Dante. So without saying too much, I don't think you or anybody wants me to probably say where exactly they're going, but I really have enjoyed it, and I've had a lot of people come up and enjoy it, and it's something that I felt really strongly about, and I haven't made it a secret that I really like Lio, and I think he's a tremendous talent, and I think he's benefited from the coaching that I've given him, and he's gotten great coaching from others. I think Sanjay did a great job on that match last night coaching with them, and Sanjay and I work real close with Lio and Dante and with Seidel and Moriarty. So I am a huge fan of Lio Rush, and I really think he's got a lot. Like I said, it's his birthday. Happy birthday, Lio. And I think he's had – I'll choose my words carefully here. When Lio retired from wrestling, he came in, he did one show for us, he retired from wrestling, and I actively recruited him to come back and thought it would make a lot of sense for Lio at his young age, once he got over the injury, to you know, just trust me and like let's give this a shot, because I think he'd had a tough go other places, and he was mentally, it seemed, really burned out on the wrestling business, and he's done other things. He's a great athlete. He's also got a great personality, and he's been on MTV The Challenge, which is a big show. And but if he's not wrestling, I think he's not using great talents that he has. And so I'm glad people got to see that last night. He had debuted in the Casino Battle Royale at Double or Nothing, but then we had never seen him wrestle on TV or in an actual, you know, sanctioned match. So I was really pleased with how it turned out. And for the live crowd, I went back out with Leo and Dante when we were in break and raised their hands for the crowd because I thought they did that well. So it was very good.
Okay, thanks, Tony. So next is going to be Samantha Shipman from the Daily DDT. Then I'm going to take a question from a write-in, then we'll spin the wheel to see what the final question of the day is. So, Samantha, you're up.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you, Tony?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Samantha.
Good. I have two questions for you, but we'll start with the first one because I think that might be a little bit more of what everybody's going to be listening for. So we've seen last night, we saw Best Friends join Chaos. Kenta has put it out there that he wants to GTS Punk. We've seen Kenta in AEW. We've seen Rocky Romero. We've seen Suzuki. We've seen Nagata. So what is the relationship with New Japan like heading into 2022? And is that something where we could potentially see AEW wrestlers going into things like Wrestle Kingdom and New Year Dash, or even later in the year, maybe in the G1? Or what is that kind of looking like with that relationship right now?
Okay, and what's your second question?
My second question is completely different from that. It is actually about the women's division. And we see
Kim, it's fine. Is it okay if I answer that one and then go back to your other question? Just so I don't.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. It's a great relationship. I really enjoy working with New Japan. It changed a lot since AEW started, because when AEW first started off, I think they were pretty pissed off with me. And then as wrestling went on, I think they saw that, like, I wasn't really trying to stop them from doing anything, and I actually made a lot of friendly gestures along the way. Like Chris Jericho, I was very open about Chris Jericho working in New Japan, and then when he was wrestling at the Tokyo Dome in January 2020, I even cleared the stipulation, which we put together. You know, Chris basically was the go-between me and them at that point, that we would have it effectively be an AEW title eliminator match with Tanahashi versus Jericho, not unlike some of the matches we do on Dynamite, where it's, hey, if you beat the champ, you get a shot at the title. And that's what we said. You know, if you beat Chris, you could come to AEW and get a shot at our title. So it added a lot of interest, I think, to their show in that match, and that was great. And also, I had been pretty open about John Moxley wrestling there, and I cleared dates time after time for John to work there. And so I think they saw this was a good relationship, and I have a good reputation for being an honest person. So even though I kind of came out of left field and I was a new player in the game, I think I raised their antenna early and made them pretty nervous. And then the more I build a reputation in the sport, I think they wanted to work with me. And so now I talk to them on a regular basis, and we put matches together, and wrestlers from AEW go there. And as you said, I mean, you said it yourself in the question, I don't have to name all the different people that have come through from New Japan to AEW, but you've given a good list to start with of a number of people. And there's more, I think, in there, and there's probably more to come. So there's a lot of things we can do. And I'm a fan of a lot of their stuff. I was really pleased how many fans loved the Roppongi Vice theme last night, because I felt really strongly they should come out to the Roppongi Vice theme. I thought it would, for the fans that do like both shows and have watched both shows, you know, people remember the Trent and Rocky team. So if Orange and Rocky are coming out, it makes a lot of sense. Plus, I mean, it doesn't hurt in terms of building anticipation for Trent to come back, which I'm looking forward to. I'm a big Trent fan. And look, with New Japan, it's a good relationship. And that's why I was so amused when the story of the day on a weekend in the summer, this past summer, was this story that kept getting buzzed, that clearly was getting signal boosted by some PR person, that New Japan would work with WWE, which was comical to me because I was doing all this stuff with New Japan. I had all these plans with New Japan, and I knew Nagata was going to be coming to Dynamite, and we were doing this stuff with Kenta and had other plans in the future. And this was before we had even worked out Suzuki coming in. And I'm not sure if you mentioned Kojima, I didn't hear it, but you might have. But Kojima is another great wrestler who's come in and wrestled on pay-per-view for us at All Out, had a great match with Mox. So I've really liked working with them, and I had this close relationship with them. And that's why I was like close to a live show, and I thought it would be a fun promo to cut to get some buzz on the show talking about the fact that we have the partnership with New Japan. And I've been reading all these stories that New Japan and WWE are about to start this deal. And if that's the case, it's news to me because I had just reunited Roppongi Vice on Elevation, and you know, Nagata was going to be coming in, and we had all these plans with the U.S. title with Mox, and I knew that, you know, we had talked about what I was setting up with Mox versus Lance for the Texas Death Match, which was going to lead to Lance versus Tanahashi for them. So we've been working together pretty close. So I asked them if they wanted me to do this promo because I thought it would be good buzz for New Japan and AEW, and they thought it was hilarious. So that's how that happened. So yeah, it's a great relationship. I really like working with them. And they have a great history, and a lot of our wrestlers have great history there, and they also have a lot of great wrestlers of their own. So it's a great thing we have going.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Samantha.
Samantha has a second question, I think, Jim.
Yes, I do. So thank you, first of all, for the very thorough response to that question. That definitely answered a lot of questions. So my other question is about the AEW women's division and how much it's grown. And we see, obviously, the TBS championship is about to be, we're about to crown a winner very soon. So do you see, will you be treating the TBS title on the same level as the AEW women's championship?
I think you should think of the TNT championship and the TBS championship as sibling championships.
That's where I was going.
I mean, I think the TNT championship is one of the most important championships in wrestling, and it's been defended in huge matches. And at times, I mean, we've done massive ratings, and some of the biggest ratings we've ever done on Dynamite are for TNT title matches. And you can look back, we've had some monster ratings for things like Brody Lee versus Dustin Rhodes for the TNT title right after All Out 2020. Cody and Brody in the dog collar match did a great number, and Darby versus Brian Cage did a really good number, and Darby versus Matt Hardy, Falls Count Anywhere, for the TNT title is one of the biggest numbers we've ever done. So I think the TNT title has a great history, done some really big numbers, and then our women's championship, again, it's Dr. Britt Baker's great champion. Whoever wins the TBS championship, I think we have a number one contender, Ty Conti, now that's in line, to me, to wrestle for the world title. So the way I did the TBS championship bracket was, okay, let's take the top five. And you had number two, three, four, five. So you had, Jade Cargill, Thunder Rosa, Nyla Rose, and Chris Statlander. I gave them what we would do in like seeding in the NFL or in a lot of sports tournaments. You would take the top seeds and give them a bye. So as we were building, Ty Conti, I think, is, by the way, we're talking about our women's division. It's not on the subject of the TBS championship because Ty Conti is wrestling for the world title. But I have to say, Ty Conti is one of the most improved wrestlers in the world. And I always thought she was a great prospect. And for years, I really admired her. She's one of the people I was really shocked we were able to hire, because it was somebody that I was surprised got let go. And when she got fired, I wanted to snap her up very quickly. I was a big fan of Ty Conti. And I think she's a great number one contender. And I'm really excited for the Ty Conti versus Britt Baker match. Britt's been a great, great champion for us. And Ty's a great number one contender. So the TBS championship, I took the rest of the top five, who are all also top contenders in line, gave them the first round buys, and then took, the next eight and built a 12-woman field. And now we're into kind of, I don't want to upset the NCAA, but I will not call it the Elite Eight, but we're into this really great eight final women, and really excited for the quarterfinals of the TBS championship tournament. And I think it would help a lot. Like, you know, I'm a huge believer in the TNT championship. I really love the title. And I think Sammy's one of the pillars of the company, and I'll have great matches to come. And I just think that if you could think of it as like the sibling championship, that'll probably be treated very similarly.
Okay. Thank you, Samantha. Thank you, Tony. Okay. I've got one write-in question, and we've spun the wheel in the last few minutes here. So Garrett Martin from Paste Magazine will ask the last question after I ask Tony this write-in question from Daniel McMahon Young of Gatekeepers. Tony, his question is, with AEW having such a diverse fan base, what do you think has been AEW's biggest strength in attracting non-traditional wrestling audiences in the last 6 months or so?
It's a great question, Jim. I think wrestling speaks to everyone, and I don't think you have to be great at sports, but you can be, and I think, like, wrestling brings lots of people together, because when I was a kid, like, wrestling was kind of the intersection of, and I'm just speaking from my own experiences as a kid and as a fan before I was like a wrestling promoter, booker, or executive. So I've seen wrestling bring really diverse groups of people together, people that are, you know, jocks, and people that don't play sports at all, and people that are really into music, or people that are into art. And it's just an intersection of a bunch of really unique communities of people. So when you bring in people with unique interests, like, you know, as I've said, whether it's music or sports or something completely different, you will get all kinds of different people. And so, and wrestling's also not like some sports where it's only popular in one part of the world. Wrestling's big in a lot of countries, you know, where some sports that we watch on TV or that are big on TV and do good ratings in America, for example, they may not be as popular as wrestling in a lot of these other countries. So wrestling, it's big all over the world. And I think it just speaks to a really diverse group of people. And AEW now has gotten great penetration. And as we go into our third Full Gear pay-per-view and we go into our final pay-per-view of this 2021, it's really our first chance we've had to show off this new roster of wrestlers. And I'm very excited about it, because we have all these big stars we've signed, you know, CM Punk, Adam Cole, Bryan Danielson, Ruby Soho, and many others in the company. And the company's really grown, and I'm really just very excited, because coming out of Full Gear, I think people will see more so than ever, you know, looking back at where we were a year ago, how far the company's grown. And to your question, because it's a great question, I think also, you know, trying to add AEW in more countries, trying to expand our TV, you know, we've got Dynamite on a lot of places now, getting Rampage on more places, and making our pay-per-views available on different countries on different platforms. I think we can continue to grow the audience worldwide, which will help us make an even more diverse fan base.
Thank you, Tony. Okay, we're going to call on Garrett Martin from Pace Magazine. And Garrett, you're up. And after Tony's response, then we'll wrap this up. Garrett?
Cool. Hey, Tony. Thanks for talking. So let's circle back to Full Gear for this last question. I know a lot of people, they're expecting something like a coronation for Hangman this weekend. Now, how did his paternity leave impact the timing of that and your plans? And how different would the last 2 months of the main event scene have been if he hadn't taken that time off?
Well, I don't want to say what my plans are. I think everyone's going to have to watch here and buy the pay-per-view to see what exactly is going to happen with Kenny and Hangman in the world title match. I have looked forward to doing Hangman versus Kenny for a long time. Him taking time off absolutely impacted the main event scene because Hangman Page was one of the top contenders and is one of the key wrestlers in the company. So it was something I had to pay close attention to, absolutely. But on the other hand, I tried to make lemonades out of lemon, as I'm often doing when there are challenges with scheduling shows and with people traveling and coming to the shows. And in this case, if he wasn't going to be at the shows, I had to make the best of the situation. And I think we did. And, you know, to be without one of our top stars in the company and still put together All Out and have All Out be such a great success and be so well received by the fans and also such a commercial success and sell well over 200,000 pay-per-views worldwide. And, you know, that was before people knew for sure that Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole had come into AEW. And now that we've got this amazing roster of people here, it's pretty amazing to me how far we've come. But now, really, again, this will be the first time we've been able to show off so much of the new roster at one time. So I would say it wasn't exactly what I'd originally expected when he wasn't available around All Out, but I also try to make the best of it. And it's great to have Hangman back now, and I'm really looking forward to Kenny versus Hangman for the world title.
Thanks, Garrett. And Tony, thanks for the extra time today. That was very nice of you. And really, thanks to everyone. We're now officially know at the end of our time. So per our custom, we're going to be distributing an audio recording to all attendees here shortly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.